Well, it's certainly been an eventful 6 months since Donald Trump returned to the Oval Office. Let's try and summarise it. The bombing of Iran, mass deportation of migrants, and the riots, of course, that followed in LA. A doomed and destructive bromance with the world's richest man, the on-again, off-again tariffs, and the so-called war on woke. And that is exactly where we're going to focus the podcast today. Cast your mind back a few months ago. Do you remember these comments from US Vice President J.D. Vance?
The threat that I worry the most about vis-a-vis Europe is the threat from within. The retreat of Europe from some of its most fundamental values, values shared with the United States of America. In Britain and across Europe, free speech, I fear, is in retreat.
Or did you happen to read this quote from Samuel Sampson? He's an interesting guy and he is a senior advisor to Secretary of State Marco Rubio. He wrote, "Europe has devolved into a hotbed of digital censorship, mass migration, restrictions on religious freedom, and numerous other assaults on democratic self-governance." Why don't you tell us what you really think of us? It's not just rhetoric. The Trump administration does have Ireland firmly in its sights because we, of course, are home to so many of the big tech companies here, and it's our regulators in Ireland who are responsible for moderating a lot of what people see on social media. And if they don't do so, they're going to face huge EU fines. I think it is fair to say that the White House doesn't like this. They say they'll impose visa bans on any Irish officials who impose strict EU rules on online content because that, according to the Trump administration at least, is censorship. It's a lot to take in. But there's more. Irish students heading across the Atlantic this summer are being asked to make their social media accounts public to US officials as part of their visa application process. The Taoiseach has described it as excessive. Now, what exactly is it that they're looking for? Well, this is what they say. Any indications of hostility towards the citizens, culture, government, institutions or founding principles of the United States. It's pretty broad. And it doesn't really sound like freedom of speech to me. I'm Ciara Doherty. Welcome to News Talk Daily. Jo Lynham, News Talk's business editor, is here. Hi, Jo.
Hi, Ciara.
Let's go back, right? Because I sometimes think we talk as if the tech industry has been here since the turn of the state. It certainly hasn't been. But what brought them to Ireland in the first place? What's the origins of the tech sector here? What was it about little old Ireland that made it so attractive?
It's a very relevant question because a lot of people, especially the younger generations, Gen Z, will assume they've always been here. They haven't. There was a very big decision taken in 1989 when the IDA, the Industrial Development Authority, charged with bringing foreign direct investment into Ireland, decided to bet the house on luring Intel into this country, into Leixlip in County Kildare. And that decision has been absolutely seminal because the IDA back then had a budget, really modest compared to today's budget, and they usually distributed among maybe a dozen companies, maybe even two dozen companies. But they persuaded the then Minister, Mr. McSharry, to bet the house on Intel, this chip-making giant from California, to come to little old Kildare, build a giant fabrication unit, and that changed the course of economic history in Ireland for the simple reason that around that grew an ecosystem, an infrastructure of technology that simply wasn't there before. Apple had been there a while, but they were down in Cork and they were making very specific kind of assembly of stuff. But around that came the technology companies, came the personnel, came the talent, came the money that has mushroomed into an ICT industry that we have today.
I mean, it was transformative, wasn't it, to the country? What did they offer them?
Well, they offered them to give them the land for free, and they offered them financial inducements, and they offered them trained graduates, and they offered them
whatever they wanted.
Whatever they wanted, and the motorway, the M4, which was being built at the time, they offered them an exit into that as well. There was lots of stuff, and the lobby stuff that we'll never hear about. that would have been provided back then, including the ear of the minister and the Taoiseach of the day, some guy called Charles Haughey. Added to that, 12.5% corpo tax. We were cheap back then. It's hard to imagine now when you're trying to buy a coffee for €5, but we were cheap in 1989. Our hourly wages were low. Land prices were very, very affordable. Rents, very, very modest. So you have to put that in the context of back then and compared to where we are now.
Well, let's fast forward. I'm just looking here. 1989, 36 years, right? It's over three decades. It's absolutely mushroomed. I mean, how big is it now, Joe, and what is it worth us here?
The ICT sector, the information and computing and technology sector is worth around 25% of all corporation tax that we get into this country, which is the largest, almost the largest source of income that the state get. And it is way more than any other European country in terms of corporation tax. It pays 10% of the wage bill of this country. If the economy has 2.8 million people working in it, around a tenth of that are employed in the ICT sector. And they pay a huge amount of money in corporation tax. But the wage bill is really important. The average wages might be €55,000 in this country, maybe €50,000, depending. In that sector, it's well over 100 grand.
So these are pretty steady, pretty reliable and really well paid jobs.
Very well paid jobs. Now, there will be those people who say they are responsible for bidding up rents, for bidding up house prices, and that there is a downside to that. Whether it's steady and reliable and locked in, that's another discussion. Because remember, Intel have built a physical presence of fabrication units. Other ICT digital companies, they can up sticks pretty quickly.
You have made it really clear, Joe, that these companies are really important to Ireland. They have well-paid jobs and they contribute a small fortune, let's face it, to our corporation tax. I mean, we are the envy of the world and have been for a long time. That has to put a huge amount of pressure, whether they admit it or not, on Irish regulators like the Data Protection Commissioner and Commissioner Naman. It has to.
It does. It does. And the Irish regulators have an outsized importance in European terms when it comes to dealing with the technology giants, the online platforms, when it comes to free speech, hate speech, online abuse, paedophilia online, all that kind of stuff must be regulated by the local regulator, not centrally in Brussels or Frankfurt, but by the local regulator. And we've got Comisiun Naman, which is a relatively new body, as you know, but often they are leaned on by other regulators who are sitting around the table in Brussels and saying, you need to clamp down much harder on these guys. They're in your backyard. And so the Data Protection Commissioner here, which is another quango, it wants to impose relatively modest fines on some of the likes of Facebook and Google, etc. But they're getting all sorts of pressure from the Germans and from the Austrians and from the French and the Italians saying, no, it's our kids being impacted by companies sitting in your backyard paying you corporation tax.
Let's look at the Trump administration, Joe, because I don't think it's an exaggeration to say he doesn't really like Europe very much. He certainly doesn't seem to have much respect for Europe, for how it is run, for European values. He certainly does not like EU regulation of tech companies, any of those laws like GDPR or the Digital Services Act, because obviously they make it harder for tech giants to do what they need to do and to make money.
Yeah. So the one thing that Europe does have is regulatory heft, regulatory weight. It can say, we want you, if you're operating in our market, which is the biggest single market in the world, we want you to play by our rules. We have far stricter rules when it comes to personal information being shared in this continent. They don't have the same kind of rules in America. They do have some rules about personal data, but nothing like the way we have it here. They also have this thing, the First Amendment in the United States, which allows freedom of speech. We in Europe allow freedom of speech, but protect against certain things. And I named some of them earlier, hate speech. You can't, for example, openly say that the Holocaust didn't happen in anywhere in the European Union. You can in America because we have had a different history here in Europe.
Hate speech, Joe, I have to say it's one of those terms that kind of triggers me because I'm brought back to discussing and debating the hate speech legislation that never actually made it onto the statute books here. And it was just so contentious, wasn't it? There was such resistance that in the end, when it came to introducing legislation around hate crimes and hate speech, we left the hate speech part out in Ireland. And the EU don't like that. And they're coming after us for it. And we're in a pickle.
I have a funny feeling that Ireland may end up on the right side of this debate, that the European Union, because it's politically drifting to the right, that Ireland may end up on the right side of things ultimately. But that'll take years. Who knows? There's a lot of water going to flow under the bridge in the row between the Europeans and the Americans.
There was this visit recently, which we read about in the papers. Samuel Sampson, who I quoted a couple of minutes ago, he was part of a delegation from the US that came to Ireland to meet the regulators here to warn that there could be repercussions, really, if we come after these tech giants and if we try and sort of clamp down on free speech on their platforms, including visa restrictions, visa bans. If Dublin is seen to be too enthusiastic about imposing some of these laws, some of these regulations, do you think they'll follow through in that threat?
It is a pretty nasty threat to impose on an independent regulator who he or she are doing their jobs. But one thing that you can never accuse Donald Trump and his administration of doing is not following through on their promises. They have followed through on every single thing that they said they would do.
Well, what about TACO?
Trump always chickens out.
You know, they do come after you with these big threats that grab the attention, grab the headlines. Everybody goes, you can't behave like that. And then they kind of soften their cough.
Yeah, but they did say they would clamp down on immigration. They're arresting American naturalized citizens right, left and centre. And they are following through on their vicious threats on allies, the Canadians, Greenland, Europe.
Well, I don't know if we're an ally anymore. Look, Joe, go into your crystal ball. I see it there on the desk. What's going to happen? How is this going to play out?
Here's my guess.
Your hot take.
I think a lot of these companies are going to wait out the next 3.5 years. I think they're going to promise great things to Donald Trump and his administration. They may even buy a plot of land in South Carolina or Georgia or whatever it is. They may even turn the sod on it. But they will stop there and wait.
And they'll pay the fines if they come from the regulator, and Ireland will pay the fines for not introducing the laws as required by the EU.
Luckily,
and we'll all just wait it out.
Luckily, the legal system takes forever.
Ah, God bless inefficiency. Sometimes it could save us a fortune. Joe Lynam, thanks for joining us on News Talk Daily.
Thank you.
Now, let's take a deeper look into some of the issues Joe outlined there. With me here in News Talk Daily HQ is journalist and entrepreneur Mark Little. The co-founder of Storyful and Kinzen, Mark went on to work for tech giants Twitter, now X, and Spotify. He was also RTE's first Washington correspondent. So I think it's fair to say you're something of an expert in this area, Mark.
Well, he's an anorak, at least. Trying to understand what's going on in the world is difficult right now.
Oh, you better believe it. Okay, let's try and understand this. When you read stories about US officials travelling to Ireland, bringing pressure to bear on Irish politicians, on the regulators here, on issues like moderation of speech and online content, does that come as any surprise to you?
It doesn't, but I think it's helpful to see it in different layers. Like the first layer is what the Trump administration now specialises in, what they call muzzle velocity. You say something so outrageous and so threatening that the bang and the flash make people kind of cower in fear. And in this case, there's three issues going on at the same level. The first issue, I think, is a kind of an export of a cultural revolution that's come with MAGA. Because the MAGA hardcore are people who believe that the platforms have been censoring them for years. They believe that the Europeans don't care about free speech, and they're trying to support movements that are much more against liberal democracy. That's the first layer, of which there is like brazen hypocrisy here, right? Because obviously back home, the Trump administration is silencing its critics who they don't like, and also ignoring free speech abuses by people like the Russians or the Turks or the Saudi Arabians or a whole number of countries that are pro-American. The second layer is real substantial differences culturally between the way Americans feel about free speech and their First Amendment and how we in Europe have a different cultural background. And then finally, this is the one I really worry about, is that this is really just about supporting big American tech companies to have dominance, particularly against the Chinese. So whatever the US administration can do to roll over the European Union and particularly countries like Ireland and persuade them to let these big tech companies have free reign, that I think in the end of the day is the most consequential part of this and also potentially the most threatening from an Irish perspective.
Is there a sense, do you think sometimes, Mark, that we are America, we own the internet, we created the internet, we expanded it, we turned it into what it is today, therefore we will decide what goes out on it?
Yeah, but the problem is the internet was taken over by the massive big giants. So for example, Meta will complain and Google will complain, and they already have to the Irish government saying, you got to remove the layers of regulation. But you look at the regulation they want repealed. It's antitrust, anti-competitive regulations. Like Meta is fined because it's charging users to not let their data be used for advertising, right? And there's a word, I'm not sure if you can use it here, and that's becoming very popular among those who look at this, is the enshittification of the internet, right? The internet starts
You can definitely
out,
use that here. Say it again, actually.
The enshittification of the internet. Cory Doctorow, a great writer on this, talks about the fact that we all come on the internet with a full of the joys of the collaboration and openness. And before we know it, the terms and conditions start to kick in. And before we know it, we're locked in to somewhere like Meta or to the Google platforms or even to X. And European regulation is all about breaking that apart so that we all have much more choice as internet citizens when we go on any platform. That's what the Digital Markets Act is about. That's what the Digital Services is about. And that's why the American big tech companies hate this, because it's not allowing them to essentially turn the internet into their own commercial private preserve.
We talked about Trump. We're talking about the big companies. What about ordinary Americans? They are very proud of their First Amendment rights. They are very proud of their freedom of speech and their attitude towards that. You've lived in the United States. Are Americans surprised when they come abroad? They live in Ireland, they live in France, they live in Germany, or live anywhere in Europe, and those same broad freedoms and those protections don't exist?
Yes, absolutely. And it's one of those the most deep biases on both sides, I think. On one hand, remember, the First Amendment of the US Constitution is about freedom of speech. It's culturally embedded in who the American people are and what their state's about. It's essentially a negative right, because the Constitution says you can't pass any law that comes within shouting distance of infringing this one right. So it's in the culture, the political culture, but also instinctively what makes Americans feel American. That's why it's the First Amendment. Now move to Europe. Move to a place like Germany, where you have a different cultural context. So, for example, the banning of Nazi symbols or the taking down of any kind of content that supports the far right has a different cultural connotation. Because actually, in living memory of some Germans, they remember the Holocaust. They remember the Second World War. So that clash of cultures is real. It's a genuine concern. And I think in Europe, there has been governments that have overstepped the bounds to silence dissent against democracy, which definitely Americans have a point about. At the same time, the European regulations that now the EU is leading are exactly the kind of thing we would want if we wanted a compromise. So the Digital Services Act, it's all about openness and transparency of these opaque content moderation decisions already being taken by the big tech companies. It's only trying to make what's illegal offline illegal online. So if you want to protect freedom of speech, both in its European definition and American definition, this Digital Services Act is actually what you want, because it's showing how these decisions are actually made, and it's holding the big tech companies to account for every time they either censor content or their recommendation systems reward the most outrageous voices. This is the best fix against censorship, ironically, even though people like the Trump administration say it's censorship, it's the opposite.
So what happens when Samuel Sampson, he was the advisor to the US Secretary of State Marco Rubio and one of the officials who actually came to Dublin, what happens when he goes in and meets the Irish regulator here and says Europe's approach to moderating free speech is basically Orwellian? What's the response? What's he hearing back?
There will be an instinct, I think, in policymakers to try and appease, right? Or not to antagonize at the very least. They have to understand that we have got to be selling to our own people the kind of philosophy behind our big regulation right now against big tech companies. It's there to protect you as a citizen. And this kind of policies we've talked about, that's the Digital Markets Act. This Digital Services Act is there to make sure that we know how these things work. And I think there's been a failure on the part of policymakers in Europe to properly articulate a vision that balances both the concerns in this case. At the same time, national governments have got to realize they can't decree what people say online. I think in certain countries like Germany, the UK, there has been an overreach, but they have got to resist what at the moment in the form have you described here is an attempt to intimidate and sell a cultural revolution that absolutely has to be resisted. And I think anybody thinks they can appease that and still have any capacity for sovereignty in Europe and in Ireland is deluding themselves.
Is it worth pointing out the irony of all this that you mentioned a little earlier, in that while he advocates being the sort of proponent of free speech and he, you know, talks about the concerns he has about Europe backsliding when it comes to free speech, that actually when you look in the United States, free speech is only for the speech his administration deem acceptable?
I have friends in the American media right now. One said to me recently, I'm waiting for the call from the FBI and knock on my door. You have foreign students that are speaking out about Palestine that are now in detention. No one can find them. You have media organizations that are being sued by Donald Trump himself. I mean, I can go on and on and on. They only believe in free speech for the people that agree with them. And this.
So they don't believe in free speech then?
They don't. They ultimately want to make sure that at the end of the day, this cultural revolution that they're having in the United States, that is MAGA, is going to get exported. But someone who is a big, I suppose, love affair of my life is with the United States. That's not America. That's not America. And most of all, we have to understand that, you know, whatever happens in these next few years, Europe has got to stand up and have its own sovereign approach to a very difficult issue of content moderation, which are protecting citizens. And it's got to make that case. Do not let yourself be caught in the muscle velocity of MAGA, because that way it's disempowerment for our citizens. And at the end of the day, you're not going to get anything out of it.
How do Irish officials realistically navigate that? How do you square that circle?
I have an immense amount of not just sympathy, but also solidarity with US or Irish officials who are sitting there having to deal with two contradictory thoughts in their mind without going completely batshit crazy. Right. The first is, obviously, we have to protect foreign direct investment in this country. And to do that, first of all, we have to balance our national and our European obligations. Now, that is not as big as difficulty, I think, as people think it might be. One area Ireland could stand out on, I think, is to be campaigning inside the European Union to accelerate the right kind of regulation, openness, transparency, and get rid of the wrong kind of regulation that's keeping back not just American businesses in Europe, but Irish businesses who want to scale. Europe has got to take innovation seriously, and it's got to look at free speech. And I have to say, I've been working for more than a decade in the areas of disinformation. We did overcorrect. I think we may have gone too far in suppressing speech and decreeing what people said online. And now we've got a much better approach, which is openness, transparency. So I think the Irish government has in its power the ability to articulate something that is good for our connection, but is still fundamentally about empowering our citizens and defending a position in Europe that I think is the right position on issues like content moderation. Knowing the tech companies, they're not necessarily the ones screaming and shouting in the ear of the Irish policymakers. I mean, they're willing to take their licks, right? Take a few fines, continue working. They like being here. I don't think the social media companies or big tech companies necessarily want to leave here at all. So there is room, I think, in the background here.
We have leverage too.
We have leverage because this is a great place to be building a company, that Ireland has become a bridge to the rest of the world for these American companies. I remember we were the place that we served in Twitter when it was there. 80% of the users of Twitter were around the world. This was their international gateway. That's still the case. So there is three parts here. There is the Americans shouting at us. There's our relationship with Europe. And there is this fine dance that's happening in behind closed doors with big companies that do want to be here for a reason. And it's not necessarily the weather.
Be interesting to see where that dance takes us, won't it? Mark Little, it's been really great having you here on Newsweek Daily. So what do you think? If it comes to a choice between protecting our relations with the United States and those Irish-based jobs, or being good Europeans and avoiding mass fines for not implementing regulations, which direction should we take? You can email us anytime, newstalkdaily@newstalk.com.
This is GOMO. This is $14.99 a month mobile for life. With GOMO, you get all calls, texts, all 5G data for just $14.99 a month, a guaranteed price for life. Switching is easy. Visit gomo.ie, sign up, and you are good to GOMO. Join GOMO, the award-winning mobile network.
Unlimited data refers to domestic use only. 30-day contract applies. A once-off SIM activation fee of $14.99 applies. For full details, terms, roaming and text fare use, see gomo.ie.